Up North podcast.
Oh my goodness, Kirk, you've outdone yourself yet again. Hey, joining us tonight are Jill Good and Mark Leitner, partners in the firm Laffey, Leitner & Good. Kirk, why don't you start by telling us, you know, in what CD pool hall you found these guys, where they found you, and take it from there.
All right. So we just ended the last segment kind of talking about why, you know, the Monaco Brewing Company kind of stepped into this gap of, you know, of legal potential lack of leadership from, you know, our government, maybe officials. But so I went straight to Law Forward. I know those guys. Those guys were kind of the ones who originated the complaint against the fraudulent electors over a year and 2 months ago. And so I was like, guys, this is kind of part and parcel of this fraudulent elector bit. And they said they were, you know, they said, Kirk, listen, like we're litigating gerrymandering right now. We're litigating, you know, the fraudulent electors, drop boxes. I mean, they were loaded up. They couldn't take anymore. They don't have the staff. And so they put me in touch with these guys, they actually put me in touch with, you know, these guys and a few others. And I started calling and, you know, other lawyers in Wisconsin, because it's such a small state, they have to deal with especially corporate lawyers, who are generally the best ones, because, you know, you have to deal with huge corporate stuff, which means you get paid a decent amount and you have big issues you have to solve. These guys, some other lawyers would not take this case on because they're like, well, we might anger Republicans by suing a sitting U.S. senator and two U.S. congressmen, which is going to anger a lot of Republicans. But these guys wouldn't take it on because they were too scared. And so, you know, I called up Joe, and you know, he listened to me, listened to what I had to say, and he thought it was a righteous thing to try to do. And regardless of whether he has corporate clients, the Republican or not, he wanted to take this case up with Mark and his firm. And I really applaud them for that. I mean, they're sticking their necks out just like, you know, a lot of us are here selling beer that's progressive. So thank you guys for joining the show tonight. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. So
we're happy to be here.
Great. So I want to give it away. I want to just have you guys take the show. So the next 15 minutes, this is the best that any Wisconsinite is going to get. We got two big time lawyers that are filing this suit who 70 pages these guys wrote about this. And they're going to give you the layout of this, what they think is the real conspiracy that happened here. This is not a conspiracy theory, QAnon style. This is like a real live conspiracy.
Right. This is the ones where again, a lot of the times when Republicans accuse people of something, it's projection. You know, they're the ones that are actually doing it. So guys, let me set it up this way to have you answer it, to answer the basics of the lawsuit. But I want to ask it this way. Why did you say yes to this? Why did you say yes to Kirk? Why did you take this on? And that'll lead us into, you know, what are the basic arguments of this lawsuit?
Sure. You know, what I think is an apocryphal story that made its way into a play called The Night Thoreau Spent in Jail. And the story there is that, as people generally know, Henry David Thoreau, the famous transcendentalist writer from New England, once spent a night in jail because he refused to pay his taxes because they were being used to pay for military and war things. And he stood on principle, and then someone came down to the local government center and paid his taxes, so he was let out of jail. And all that is true and all that is history. But there is an apocryphal story about how Thoreau, when he was in jail, the night he was there, was visited by his mentor, the even more distinguished transcendentalist Ralph Waldo Emerson. And Emerson was shocked that Thoreau would do such a thing, and that he was in jail from, you know, a place where common criminals went. And Emerson came in and said, Henry, what are you doing in jail? And Thoreau looked at Emerson and said, Waldo, what are you doing out of jail?
There you go.
And that's kind of how we looked at it, is how can we not do this? This was, you know, the violence of January 6th aside, this is one of the more elaborately orchestrated, all the way to the top efforts to undermine the way that we do things in the United States. And one of all our hallmarks is we do a peaceful transfer of power, and we don't, you know, losers in elections concede and they get ready to hand the reins over to the winners. And that didn't happen here. And Joe Good, who is probably the foremost lawyer in the state of Wisconsin, if not a broader area, at assembling and mastering and distilling incredibly complicated sets of facts into coherent, compelling narratives, is the person who put that 70-page complaint together, because we thought this was not only a legal necessity, but a moral one.
Well, so let's make that transition to Joe then, in talking about the argument and laying out the arguments you made. And I'll ask you to be a little bit more local specific, because yes, we can get into what, you know, allegedly, you know, President Trump was doing at the time and other people close to him. But I want to make sure we fold in Tiffany and Fitzgerald and Johnson as well. So sure. Keep that in mind, Joe, as you tell us what is the crux of the narrative you're putting together.
Sure. So thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate being here tonight. So yeah, Mark's 100% right. I'm not as lofty. I don't really speak, about stuff that went on in the 1850s like Mark does, and his historical lesson there. But there is some truth to that approach. The reality is this, okay? We came dangerously close on January 6th, 2021 to having a massive constitutional crisis. Okay. We had a sitting president, President Trump, and his many, many, many followers. And I am talking about not just voters. I'm talking about the three defendants in this case, Senator Johnson and Congressman Fitzgerald and Tiffany, engaged in an orchestrated and planned attempt to ensure that one thing didn't happen on January 6th. And that was that Joe Biden was not declared and elected president of the United States when the electoral votes were counted. That was the object. That was the plan. That was the goal. It was the goal of the three defendants here, Patrick. It was the goal of President Trump. And it was the goal of many other participants, many of whom are alluded to in our complaint, and many of whom we don't even know, because the complaint makes a specific reference to, in the parlance of lawyer speak and conspiracy law, those known and unknown. The reason you plead that as a lawyer is because conspiracies are typically complex. There are multiple players. And at the end of the day, for us to be successful here, we need to show one thing. We are asking a federal judge to determine that the conduct of these three gentlemen, who are our legislators in this state, duly elected, engaged or assisted in an insurrection that culminated on January 6, 2021. What'd they do? Okay. Well, Fitzgerald has got a real problem, because Fitzgerald sat down and from the time he was the majority leader in the state Senate, he, like President Trump leading up to November 3rd, 2020, spent all kinds of time in the public limelight, basically derailing the integrity of Wisconsin election procedures. Even before, while he was running for Congress, even before he was a sitting member of Congress, he was telling Wisconsin voters, Wisconsin is not running fair elections. And if you look at our complaint, you'll see that President Trump 75 times referred to the Wisconsin election as a rigged election. And Fitzgerald and his partner in crime, Robin Voss, in 2020, kept on hammering that theme about how there was an unfair election going on. The Wisconsin Election Commission wasn't doing it right. Local clerks were taking actions that were designed to undermine. That was all part of an orchestrated plan.
And at any time, one thing we need to note about that is these guys ran the legislature at that time. And at any time, had they wanted to, because they controlled a majority in both houses, had they wanted to make any changes, had they wanted to reverse anything that the local clerks were doing or that the Wisconsin Election Commission was doing with the power it had been granted. They had the power to sit down, call, you know, get together as in the legislature and pass a special session statute that would have done it. They
Mark, you forget these guys were on a beach. They took a 9-month break, Sarah.
Absolutely. They can't interrupt their vacation to come to work, Mark. That's just crazy talk.
What it really shows is that they didn't have a problem with the way we run elections.
No, they did not until after the results.
They wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to be able to say that it's crooked, and then if they win, look how great we are because we won a crooked election. And if they lose, they can do the same kind of junk that they wound up doing, right, and that Joe's going to explain a little more about.
Yeah,
that we do have that QAnon doesn't have. That's why there's 70 pages in this complaint. We have facts. Do we ever?
So what happened? So they spend 2020 hedging their bets, right? We know in August of 20 that President Trump puts together a standing committee on election integrity, puts lawyers from various law firms in this state that I won't name by name, but will simply say they put together a group of people, including Cleta Mitchell from Foley & Lardner. There, I mentioned the firm. And John Eastman. John Eastman plays a critical role in this case. He's one of President Trump's lawyers. He was standing on the dais with the president on January 6th at the Ellipse in advance of the protesters running up to the Capitol to do all the mischief that they did. And Eastman plays a very critical role in the conspiracy that we're alleging. But here's what happens. They're ready to talk about rigged elections and fraudulent elections, and they spend 2020 seeding it, making sure that the public can be morally outraged if President Trump doesn't win the election. So guess what happens? On November 7th, November 3rd, there's ballots cast. November 7th, Joe Biden is declared by the media to be the winner. And of course, the orchestrated movement about, oh, this was a fraud and all these things happen is immediately undertaken. Within days of the election, Fitzgerald and Tiffany and Johnson start trashing what happened in Wisconsin, saying it was unfair. There were all these election procedures that were violated. And part of the orchestrated acts of these folks, including the president and including all the people that are in the line of liability here for what happened, what they did is, we'll go file lawsuits. Everyone knows there were more than 60 lawsuits filed regarding the November 3rd, 2020 presidential election, all of which, by the way, were resolved in the state of Wisconsin, at least, by December 14th, 2020, which is the day by law the presidential electors had to meet in Madison at the Capitol at 12 noon, at high noon, to cast their votes for the winning ticket. So,
let me stop you there, Joe. Yeah. What were the result? What was the result of all of those lawsuits in Wisconsin before December 14th?
Zip, nada. The conclusion of the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Eastern Eastern District of Wisconsin, Judge Brett Ludwig, was there were no election procedures that went.
And the Wisconsin Supreme Court has got 4 conservative judges and 3 relatively left-leaning judges, right? And they've let my progressive world down time and time again, and they still ruled that Biden won that election.
That's correct. That is 100% correct. Within an hour and 20 minutes of the electors being set to meet at the Capitol, they issue this decision. And the most critical fact for purposes of the 10 fraudulent electors, who, by the way, we allege engaged in criminal acts, both under state and federal law, when they met to swear out certification saying that President Trump and Vice President Pence had won the election, okay, they knew. They went on in the public and said, we know what the result is, but we're going to do this anyway. That's a problem from our perspective for them. But how do they get into the Capitol? Because both state and federal law required that they actually show up in Wisconsin in the state Capitol at 12 noon on December 14th, 2020. How did they do that when the Capitol was closed because of COVID? Enter Defendant Fitzgerald, who, remember, at this time is still the majority leader in the Senate on his way to Washington to be a member of Congress come January 3rd. And we have since and more very recently learned that Fitzgerald provided them and the Republican Party of Wisconsin with access to the Capitol. And it was critical to the acts of the conspiracy, to the presence of what they needed to do to be able to create this false slate of electors. And it was critical that the false electors meet, just like the legitimate electors for President Biden and Vice President Harris, it was critical that they met at the Capitol at 12 noon. That is a legal requirement. Somebody had to facilitate that crime. That person was Scott Fitzgerald.
Joe, why was there a needed in this conspiracy that we say is a conspiracy to have a presidential coup? Why were fraudulent electors needed to achieve the goal of bumping Biden?
Actually, sure. Hold on to that thought, Joe, because we gotta head right up to commercial here. We're gonna pick that up where we left off and take just a quick break here when we come back, and we'll then find out if these guys really think they have a shot at winning this, or if this lawsuit is about as useful as Don Quixote picking fights with windmills. We'll be back after this. You're up next.